Hello and welcome to the third part of our Jo Lynn Turner special. You can check out the first two parts of this special feature by checking out our Mixcloud page. You can access that from the homepage, getreadytorockradio.com. And we bring the story up to date in this sequence. We're going to start off with a volley of albums released from 2000 onwards. We'll hear the track Show Yourself from the album released in 2001, Slam. And we're going to start off now with a track from the album Holy Man released in 2000 and also featuring Joe Bonamassa on guitar. He also contributed to the 2003 album JLT. Right now, though, let's hear Jo Lynn Turner and Angel.
Change time to imitate. No, no, no. Once you get started, you will never stop. Only a fool would hesitate. Hey, don't just sit there all alone on a shelf. Get up and show yourself. Oh, get up and show yourself.
Singers are any more vulnerable than any other member of a band, you know, in terms of pressures and politics. Did you ever feel that in any of the things that in any of the bands that you were associated with?
Well, I can only speak for the singers, and I think we're the most vulnerable of all the members in the band, really, because
you're like the front man, aren't you?
Well, not, you know, the voice is an intimate instrument. It comes from your body and soul and your heart. And if you're not rested and you're not hydrated and if you're not emotionally upset from your girlfriend or your wife the night before or whatever, everything bothers them, and you have to learn how to manage that. We're really like the princess and the pea, you know, under the mattress, you know. Oh, I had a terrible night. Why? There was a pea under my mattress. You know, I could feel everything. And I once read where a lead singer has to be. And Tyler talked to me about this as well. Steven said, you know, I need like 3 hours of alone time just to focus, creatively visualize the show, what I'm going to deliver, you know, the voice, everything. And I told him I had the same feeling. You have to go off on your own, sort of, you know, while the rest of the band is kind of, you know, they're banging the sticks on the walls and they're playing their guitars and everything. You know, singers have to go off and just not get part of that. And yes, we are the most vulnerable, most lot of times you become divas because of it. You know, I've always tried to not be such a diva about it because I've got a strong constitution. But at the same time, I mean, I am affected by everything. And you don't know you have a voice until you start singing that day. And you don't know if the gift is still with you. And it's a nightmare sometimes. I have a friend who's a great singer. I was just with him. And he is so nervous about singing and about drinking water and then making excuses for wrong notes. And I just told him to settle down. Settle down. It just let it flow. It'll come out one way or the other. It's going to come out. It's not from us. It's from above. It's or from below. It's coming out through spirits, and that's the only way you can look at it. But it's a lot of pressure. And the other thing is, now when you're considered a great singer, you know, a legend in all this, oh my God, the responsibility of that every night is just sometimes unable to bear because, you know, you've got to be phenomenal every night, and you're 2 months out on the road, and you're bleeding from the eyeballs and from the larynx, and you've just had 3 hours sleep in the last 4 days, and you've got to be brilliant. It's a tough job.
No, I think people need to realise this, don't they, that it's not as easy. Well, it's never easy, but it's certainly not as easy as perhaps people make out, you know.
Yeah, but then you've got to make it look easy.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make it, you know, you've got to get up there and make it look real easy and perfect and all that. And it's an amazing responsibility. And sometimes I said all I wanted to be was a guitar player. But then, you know, I played with some of the best. So, you know, sometimes I figured I'd make a coffee table out of the guitar.
Okay, let's have some more music. We'll hear a track from the 2005 album, The Usual Suspects, and Really Loved. And starting off with a track from JLT, the album released in 2003, this is Jolyn Turner and Dirty Deal.
Just a little. Ready to Rock Radio, music you want to hear.
To hear we're now in the millennium, so we're almost up to date, Joe, with our chronological journey through your career. And we've mentioned the great Glenn Hughes. You've collaborated on two or three albums, actually, the Hughes Turner Project.
Yeah, great album.
Now you evidently found a common bond in terms of the wider Purple family.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, I knew Glenn from my L.A. days when I was living in Los Angeles, and we were quite wild back then, and we were great mates, and always, you know, saw things pretty similar. So it was an obvious choice. And actually, the way this happened was that I was in Japan doing some promo for a new record, new solo record or something, and I can't even remember which one really. But I needed a bass player because the rest of the band was Japanese. Akira Kajiyama, brilliant guitar player. He's on some of the solo stuff. And I needed a bass player, so one of the record company there, Tony Canyon back then, said, "What about Glenn Hughes?" And I went, "Perfect." So I'm about, you know, a bottle of sake in for the evening, and I pick up the phone and I call Glenn, and he's like, "Joe?" And I'm like, "Glenn, you want to play bass?" And he goes, "Joe, do you know what time it is here?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, I forgot." You know, like, the time difference. He was in bed sleeping. I woke him up. But I go, "You want to play bass with me?" And all this. He goes, "Call me tomorrow." I go, "Okay, I'll figure out what tomorrow is for you." And I phoned him up, and he was totally into it. And when we played live, everybody went, "What a great combination." So we started HTP.
Is there any chance that might continue in the future?
You know, I always thought we should have done a third album. You know, there's always things in threes, trilogies and whatnot. But I don't know how authentic that is. But, you know, we didn't get to do it for many reasons. But I would love to.
Yeah.
Because Glenn is my brother. He considers me a brother. And although we don't converse a lot, although we do email once in a while, we don't converse a lot. He's always there for me. And likewise. And we respect each other's talents and as people.
Yes.
And that's really important in this business.
No, that's right. Let's play a track now from HTP and from, I think this was the first album, 2002, Mystery of the Heart.
Come again, throw a kiss and lose a friend. Some things are just better left in the past. Tomorrow never knows, passes by, it comes and goes. Sand. I wish that I could find a way, but I'll never.
that's the mystery of the
interview, you mentioned, Joe, that you're getting involved in music in Russia, you know, helping young musicians.
Development, yes.
Development, that's right. Now, that brings me to a very interesting project in 2005, which was, it was titled the Michael Menn Project. And strangely, he seems to be, was he the deputy mayor or something of Moscow?
He was.
Yeah.
Exactly. He was a deputy mayor of Moscow. He went on to become governor, and and then he's back in Moscow, and he controls all of the building construction, and which is quite a huge job. So I hope to see him April 3rd or 4th when we go, because we're dealing with a lot of the polity over there. And Mikhail has always been a good guy, great guy, and let me tell you, a damn good bass player and a co-writer. So he wanted Glenn, you know, I knew him before Glenn, and so I just called Glenn into the project, and he was very happy for that. And we did this one record. He kept to his word that he would only print 1,000 copies, and as far as I know, that's all that's been out there. It's really tough to get copies of this, original copies. And we did some live dates, but Glenn was busy, and he never came, which is unfortunate, because... Mm. I think Glenn would have a very, very large profile in Russia at this point.
Yeah. It's certainly an album for listeners to try and seek out, as you say, a real rarity.
Rarity.
And we've managed to locate a track from that album, Made in Moscow. This is effectively Jolyn Turner with Glenn Hughes and the Deputy Mayor of Moscow. This is Warrior of the World.
Survivor, sign my name in blood. I'm a sinner, I'm a winner. I'm here to stay.
Joe, a glittering 40-year-plus career. You've probably touched on a lot of these aspects, really, but if I asked you what has really given you the most satisfaction, you know, over four decades or more, I mean, I might be tempted to suggest it might have been Rainbow, but is there one period of your life, or maybe it was a project, that gave you particular satisfaction? You know, perhaps something a bit more obscure, even.
Well, you know, it's a very good question, and because it has been a lot of time passed, and I've been through so much, and I'm very fortunate. Thank God every day, really, I do, and the fans, because they're so supportive. You know, come hell or high water, they're always there for me, and it's remarkable. It humbles me. It really does. But that being said, what was the best, you know, moment or something? Well, I think... creating music like this, I've had so many peaks and valleys, as all artists do, and I've had different periods that I've gone through, and I think every single one of them has taught me something, and now I'm the sum total of what I have become, and it's got a whole new perspective for me, still, even at this age, and I still have the passion, like when I was 19 or 18, I still have it. I there's a fire, and it just never stops. It's an eternal flame. And I guess you could say an emotional fire in a way, but incredible. And I don't really know if I could point out. I mean, you could say a highlight was Rainbow, sure. I mean, this is the one that gave me the world stage. All of a sudden, it brought me into a world stage position. Mm. I mean, selling out Madison Square Garden, you know, was like, come on, I'm a local boy. So I have arrived. Everybody was there. Everybody knew about it, and I rose to new heights from it. And we were actually told to turn down, to suppress our excitement at Madison Square Garden because it's such a big venue. We did a great job. I'm so proud of the band. But at the same time, that was a moment. So Rainbow really brought me to the world stage. But I think I've had other musical moments that are deeper, you know, that maybe have yet to come. I'm working on a project now that's going to sort of reinvent me. He's a very well-to-do Swedish producer, and it's going to be a darker album, and it's going to be a different person, not the different person, but a different personality of the one person. So that sounds kind of strange, but it's going to be darker, heavier, but still musically accessible. And that's going to put the Jill and Turner touch on it, because it's still going to be me, but it's when I played a track for somebody, one of my good friends, they said, no one will know it's you. And I said, you're right. He goes, but right there. He goes, right there, that note right there, that's a you. And he goes, but you're using a different voice. He says, how many voices do you have? And I said to him, you know, I don't know, but it seems to be whenever I need a particular voice, I just pull it out of a hat. And I can go after it, and I have the ability, thank God, to do it. So this is going to be interesting, and that's yet to come.
Now, is that separate, or are you talking about Sunstorm, the next album?
No. Well, Sunstorm, I'm very proud of this, Edge of Tomorrow. I think you all did a great job on it. And it is what I call melodic metal.
Right.
But at the same time, this is that's one of the reasons why I couldn't even write for this Sunstorm, because I'm busy with this other project.
Right.
sort of in the works secret, but he's also produced a couple of famous people right now that he needed to work on, and we need to get together in the studio in Sweden and continue our writing and continue our projected vision
of yes. the project. It sounds so really, really exciting.
It's really going to be great.
Yes.
I think you're going to love it.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Let's have another track. It was a bonus track on your solo album in 2007. I don't know whether that was the start of your relationship with the Frontiers label, but it was one of those early albums anyway. And this is the track called Two Lights.
Yeah.
we're hoping that you get back and play some, you know, longer tour dates in the UK, certainly, and maybe. Would you hope that will be on the back of perhaps the Sunstorm album, or maybe this other project as well?
Well, I certainly hope so, because I love to play in the UK. The fans are still there, and they're still active about it. And you know, it's unfortunate, but economy, everything. You know, I think many people don't know what affects this business as a business, and why the artist is only some places and not other places. Mm. And a lot of it is economics.
Yes,
you better believe it. A lot of it is, and of course, routing and things like that. Like, I had to blow off Spain until the fall, and now we're trying to pick up Spain in the fall, and maybe then the, you know, we'll coincide with some more UK dates with the Rewind, and we'll see how it goes, you know. But there's so many logistics to this that isn't understood quite readily by the fans. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's hard to explain. I'm sorry I didn't come to your country, you know, because it's hard to explain.
No. I think they would understand, really. I mean, I think it's difficult for any artist, and you know, even a big name like yourself, it's the economics, and you know, not least the logistics and all that sort of stuff. But you know, it would be a shame if you only appeared for these like big festival events. You know, it'd be nice if it was you know, a nicely scheduled you know, tour with a few more dates. And the other thing, Joe, you know, going back to set lists, I mean, you're probably constrained at a festival because, you know, do you feel under pressure to sort of do a greatest hit set?
Well, that's what they want, isn't it? I mean, let's face it, that's what, you know, people will say, that's their nostalgia, that's their sentiment.
Yes.
And I know it's the same for me. I recently went to a Bruce Springsteen here at Giant Stadium. My friend has a box, so it's very easy to just languish in the box like royalty. But, he was doing all this stuff, and I was going, yeah, that's Nebraska, and that's this. I go, when is he going to do Born to Run? You know, when is he going to do Rosalita? You know, when is he going to do 10th Avenue Freeze Out? And these are the songs, you know, in the beginning of his career that really moved me. And I think it's a shame, when artists refuse to do their hits.
Yes.
Oh, I'm tired of doing that song, you know. If I ever said I was tired of doing I Surrender, they'd shoot me. Because that's what they remember, you know, in the back seat with their girlfriend or whatever. And I get all the stories. You know where I was when I first heard that? And it means so much to these people.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
You can't take that away from them.
No. I suppose, selfishly, I suppose your own tour means that you can probably drop in some of those songs that you've mentioned in our chat today, you know, some of the solo stuff and even tracks from Mother's Army and that sort of thing, which, you know, frankly, if you played them at a festival event, people just wouldn't recognise them, would they, really?
No, and that's the biggest problem of trying to get out of the trap that you create for yourself. You actually create this trap by writing really popular songs that have made it, and all the other songs that could be popular, that have content and rhyme and things, it falls on deaf ears because they're really not used to hearing these songs. So I guess if I just took the next 10 years to keep plowing ahead with these obscure hits that I've written on solo albums and things, they'd get it. But sometimes we don't have that much time.
No, you're
but
right.
But I am going to change up the set now. It's come to a point where I'm hit a wall, and I'm just tired of it myself. And I'm going to do a whole new vamp, and I want to do, like, something from Mother's Army. And, of course, I want to do, like, things from the Rescue record and the bits and pieces of all the other solo albums. There's so much good stuff on it that it needs to be played live. I did Endlessly the other night in Copenhagen. The place went nuts, and I just realized, yeah, okay, they want to hear this.
They want to
hear it.
Well, we want to hear it. We're going to play out with that track from the brand-new live album, Boston 1985, and it's out now. People can buy this. Street of Dreams. And we thank you so sincerely, Joe, for your time and for really a wonderful journey through your career. And I do hope the listeners will check out a lot of these albums that we've mentioned. It's such a vast... And we haven't even touched on the sessions. I mean, they probably need to go on Wikipedia or something and check that out.
Yeah. and even that is not complete.
That won't be complete, that, no. This is the thing, isn't it? I suppose, do you have a definitive list of your sessions? Probably difficult.
Well, it's even that is difficult because I find that when you're in the flow, when you're in the river, you don't really see, you know, where you're going. I mean, you just keep going, don't you? And I look back, and if it wasn't for the fans with photos and different posters and tickets and everything that they give me, I probably wouldn't have any memorabilia at all. Mm. And it's strange. It's strange. That's a phenomena, you know. And my dear mother, because she kept everything, so that's fantastic.
I can
look
back
on things. But that's really the truth. I don't walk around, say, you know, making sure I have, you know, copies of everything. And that's why I'm so gratified when people come up to me and go, here is a, you know, like a picture disc or something.
Yes.
You know, I want you to have it. And I go, man, I just saw a few items the other day that I never knew were even available. And they said, well, they're not available. They're limited editions. And I said, well, there goes that, right? And the guy handed it to me, and I went, I'll do anything for that, you know? Fantastic. Thanks to the people for that.
Yes.
And thank you, because this is a wonderful, wonderful thing you're doing. And all I can say is, please send me a link so we can post it for those who won't be able to hear it live.
Yes. We will do that, Joe. But
thank you.
From us all here at Get Ready to Rock, thank you so much, and all the very best for your future activities as well.
Thank you. Thank you for a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I really appreciate this.
You.
recorded live in 1985 and available now via Cleopatra Records in March 2016. A gig recorded in Boston that year. Jolyn Turner promoting his debut solo album, which also came out in 1985. And from that debut album, the track Endlessly, also a hit single. We hope you've enjoyed the three-part sequence celebrating the music of Jolyn Turner. We do have a dedicated page for Jo, and that's in our feature section. Navigate your way to the featured artist page, and there you'll find links to various reviews and also a link to Jo's website. We thank Jo. And from me, David Randall, thank you for listening.